that little button on top.
Oh, yours might be on.
Good evening. I'd like to welcome everyone to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Leanne, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Leanne.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will help keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. And the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're going to be discussing step three. And if you'll help me welcome our panel, we have Johnny and Ryan. So step three is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And we're going to start in the big book on page 60. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventure before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he were sought. And we're going to start with Johnny.
Hi, my name's Johnny. I'm an alcoholic. Sorry. Take it down for my size. Just to qualify myself, my sobriety date is September 25th, 2013. I have a home group. It's Friday Nooners. We're a As Bill Sees It study group. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor and so forth. Getting into this, I'm an alcoholic, which means I'm a liar, I'm a thief. And when I came to these rooms, these ABCs, that I was alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. Probably no human power could. I didn't believe it. I didn't want really any part of it. I didn't come to you guys because I wanted help. I had run my life into such devastation that everybody that were my friends were no longer my friends. I had a handful of people that cared enough about me that were pushing me away. And I knew it. And I thought if I came to these rooms for an hour a day, they would get off my back and I could drink the way that I wanted to drink. And what that looked like was I was unemployable at this point. And I would drink at home after my roommates went to bed in the dark. And I would roam around Granby or around the Ghent area during the day. just alone and desperate. I really can't find the words to describe to you how alone I truly was. It was a painful, painful place to be. And I came into these rooms, and a guy after every meeting looked at me and he said, "You never have to drink again. You never have to feel this way again, and you don't have to do it alone." If you don't hear anything else I hear tonight, I hope that you hear that if you're new. Even if you don't believe it, because I didn't believe it when I first heard it either. But it's so, so true. That's really all I have.
Thank you. Thank you. Hi, my name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 24th, 2009, and Simple Actions here is in my home group. I'm glad to see you guys this evening. I absolutely love the ABCs. That is kind of, to be quite frank, the foundation of everything that has happened since I got sober. And I love this bit about our personal adventures before and after make clear these ideas. Because to be honest with you, it was not coming to AA and like hearing about alcoholism and God and all this other stuff that convinced me that I needed this stuff. It was the own wreckage of my life and kind of like trial and error and trying to figure it out on my own and not being able to do it. And those ABCs, they're kind of the essence of the first two steps. And those two steps, I think, took me the longest, approximately 29 years to figure that one out. This idea that I was powerless over alcohol, I'm going to be real honest with you, just didn't even occur to me that is. That just doesn't even, like, make sense that I would not be able to control myself. And to be honest with you, I didn't even bother trying to control anything for a long time. I was a girl who absolutely loved to drink. I think I did it pretty much any opportunity that I had. It wasn't till those last couple of years when I noticed it was starting to interfere with things like my marriage and my ability to like hold down a job and things like that, that I was like, oh, perhaps there's a problem here. And my first instinct was not like, oh, I need to go get sober. My first instinct was that I needed to just drink less. And so I tried really, really hard to drink less. And what I discovered is that no matter how many times I attempted this experiment of like sitting down at the end of the day to have like a couple of glasses of wine, because I don't need to get drunk on a Tuesday when I need to get up in the morning for work, I could never do it. I always found myself like going through like the whole 12 pack or whatever was in the house or making return trips to the store and all kinds of crazy stuff. And eventually I realized that I was never going to be this girl that was only going to be able to have a couple of drinks. That just was not in the books for me. And that's when I decided that I was going to quit on my own. I didn't really think that I needed any help. Well, maybe from doctors. Doctors can be helpful. They give you like little pills to help you out with things like this. I thought that with the aid of a doctor and maybe some exercise and who knows what other odd things that I would be able to quit on my own, because that's what you should do. I mean, that's kind of like what the ideas that I've always grown up with was you just need to try harder. You can do it on your own. You just need to put your mind to it. And so I tried really, really hard to quit. And to be honest with you, that's where things got really, really weird for me. Because I found that no matter how hard I tried to quit, I just could not figure out how. When I read the doctor's opinion, he talks about a type of drinker that does not respond to the ordinary psychological approach. And I really wanted to be the girl who responded to the ordinary psychological approach. I wanted to be able to change my people, places, and things. I moved clear from Texas to Virginia, and I continued to drink, maybe just avoid the triggers. You know, these are a lot of the things that we hear about. My trigger was being awake. That didn't go too well. You know, I always kept waiting to hit bottom, like it's just not bad enough yet. Eventually, I realized I really was going to be the bum under the bridge with the brown paper bag. And there was all these like heart-wrenching scenes with my husband at the end, like just don't drink on Friday at least, And I would say absolutely not drinking on Friday. And then I would drink on Friday, but I was only going to have a couple, I swear. And that's the kind of mentality that I went to. And my favorite way to try and quit was tomorrow. And I'm going to be, I think I tried quitting tomorrow for a couple of years before this little voice in the back of my head said, you know, you're full of crap, Ryan, you are not going to quit tomorrow. And that's where I proceeded to get some help. And my first instinct for help was not like God. I hear a lot of people talk about like foxhole prayers where they're like, dear God, everything's messed up. Just get me out of this one. I was so far removed from that that I didn't even do foxhole prayers. Like, why would you pray for something like that? That's retarded. And so I did a lot of this human power stuff. Like I said, I wanted to do doctors. I wanted to quit on my own. My mom took like an entire week off of work to like babysit me to get me started. As soon as that Monday hit and she was back at work, I was back to drinking. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought that the magical sponsor would get me sober. And so I did that. I got the magical sponsor, and she told me to call her every day at 5 p.m. So I called her every day at 5 p.m. She said, come over to my house once a week and read the big book. I went over to her house once a week, and I read the big book. And that girl kept me sober for 2 months, and it all just kind of went to shit. Oh, ooh, went to crap. I'm trying not to curse. I'm sorry. That's kind of when I understood. And luckily for me, that gal that always read the big book with me, she talked a lot about being powerless over alcohol. She said quite frequently to me, Ryan, do you think you're going to be able to fix that? And she would talk to me about God a lot. And so I really kind of got to this place where I knew this stuff beyond doubt. I knew that no matter where I went or who I talked to or what I did or how many doctors I saw or how many times I went to rehab, I'm a rehab retread. I went to 2 rehabs in 8 months, 1 detox facility, that no matter what was going on, it was going to be crap, and it was going to be crap forever. And to be honest with you, the idea of dying did not particularly bother me at that point. I used to like fantasize of like a giant rock falling out of the sky and like squishing me dead, kind of like Looney Tunes. What was particularly horrifying to me was the idea that I might live another 60 or 70 years that way, because it was not fun anymore. At all. I was 29 years old, and my great-grandmother had lived to be like a whopping 98. So life was looking pretty horrifying. And that's all the kinds of stuff that it took for me to realize that. When I was presented with this God stuff, there was this guy one time, he read the ABCs to me, and he got to C, and he said that God could and would if he were sought. And I remember looking at that, and he's like, do you believe that? And I'm looking at it, and I'm going, well, I believe God could. I mean, if we're going to go with this idea that there's, like, some magical power out there that can do anything, then certainly he can fix this problem for me. The would part I was not so convinced about. I don't know why. I just had this idea that I would not receive any help if I asked for it. And it was kind of like at that state that I just got to a place where I was willing to try anything. Didn't really matter what it was. And that was the 12 steps for me at that point. That's all I got.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to continue on page 60. Being convinced we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits.
When I had seen a couple of people go through the steps, and I watched them. And the only way to describe it is they just bloomed like flowers. So I became convinced that it might work. There was just a glimmer of hope. This might work. And so I asked this man to sponsor me, and he had me read this every day, and I hated it. And to be honest with you, and I've been praying to be honest all week, I'm not overly fond of it now. I always want to run the show. For such a little guy, my ego is tremendous, and it's scary. But I don't like it because it's so true. It defined me. I mean, how did this guy so long ago write something that's the core of my whole being? And I knew it as soon as I read it. I still find myself trying to run the show, and I've been sober for a couple of years now in other ways. I mean, it's still there, and I still have to surrender to it. For me, this step was, and I used to be such an advocate of this step for me was a surrender step, because I went down every avenue that I could possibly think of. This was the only thing left. It was this or death. And to be frankly honest, I was just too much of a coward to kill myself, and I just didn't want to go on. I used to be the biggest advocate when people would say acceptance, but I've met so many people now that I see their program, and I know for a fact they run a good program, that they talk about it. So I'm not as strong as an advocate on surrender as well. But for me, my experience, and this was just my experience, was it was a complete surrender, that I had no other choice. Thanks.
Yeah, on the next page, there's this line. It says, whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentment, our self-pity. Whenever I read that line, I think, oh, heck yeah, that is exactly what I'm worried about. When I look back through my life, I see that there is like two trains of thought and two trains of thought only. What's going to make me happy, and what do I have to do to get it? And just like the big book says, sometimes there are good things, right? Like going to school. That's not a bad motive. You can't shirk me for that. Or maybe getting a promotion at work. Or getting the boy. Like, who wants to live alone for the rest of their lives? Like, these are perfectly fine motives. What's the problem here? Where I get into trouble is when I go into, like, this master manipulative person. You know, like, do I need to be nice to you to get this? Maybe if that doesn't work, well, we're going to just bring out the mean mode, you know? And there's, like, no God anywhere in that. For me, this whole God's will stuff, like, gets a little bit confusing because I start to bring all that stuff into it. Like, well, if I'm going to turn my life over to God, like, what's God's will for me to have? Which job? Or where am I supposed to live? Or what boy does God want me to be with? Or all this kind of stuff. And it gets really, really confusing because I can never seem to be able to figure out what God's will is. You know, like, please just, like, write me a letter, you know, give me a script or something. I'll follow along. Just tell me what it is. And it never seems to work that way. And so eventually I kind of just got, like, sick of trying to figure that stuff out because it was just too hard. And I started to make it a lot simpler for myself. I'm pretty sure that God's will for me is things like, let's be honest. You know, I'm pretty sure that God's will for me is... like, if you do something wrong, like, go make it right. I'm pretty sure that God's will for me is to, like, if you see somebody who needs help, go help them. And that made it a lot simpler for me than trying to do this, like, manipulative, figure it all out type of stuff. That's all I got.
Thank you. All right, page 61. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony?
Yeah, I'm a producer of confusion, that's for sure. I was sober for 9 months. And I went through the steps, and a job fell in my lap. And it was something that I had done 10 years earlier. And my immediate response was, great, the promises came true, just like everybody said. This stuff works. This is awesome. Well, the job became my focus point. And I had a sponsor. I had two sponsors tell me to leave the job. And they didn't say leave the job. What they said was, you need to start getting back into the step work. You need to start doing AA. Where are you at? And no, you don't understand. How am I going to pay my bills? You don't understand. I've got to, you know, this is my life now. This is what did I do this for? And all of a sudden, I stopped making phone calls. And I stopped talking to my sponsor. I actually walked away from him because I didn't want to hear the questions he was going to ask me. You know, I didn't want to do this anymore. And, you know, it was later explained to me that it worked so well, I quit doing it. And it's so true. I'm a taker. I just immediately started taking my will back. And it's a daily process with me. And it's not as terrible as I'm making it sound. I mean, my life is not all terror. My life is pretty great now. But every time that I start trying to manipulate things my way, it gets bad quick. And the longer that I'm sober and the longer that I practice these steps, the quicker it gets bad when I stop doing it, or the quicker I recognize it. I don't know which one's which. But, you know, and I had to come back in, and I had to make amends again. I had to do an inventory again. I had to do all over again. And, you know, I got on the other side of it, and it all worked out. And oddly enough, I ended up leaving that job. And within a month, I was terrified. What am I going to do with myself? Within a month, I had a better job. God just gave me benefits. I never had that before. That was kind of cool. I have vacation time, first Christmas off in forever. And I would have never seen that coming earlier. And I have time now to get back into AA. And, you know, I was just talking to a mentor about this the other day. You know, I work with a couple of men now. And I still have time to do, I like to go to the gym. I still have time to go to the gym. I still have time to work. You know, when I came into AA, my hands were so full and my life was so empty. It's just the best way to describe it. I mean, I was carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders. And now it's not that way at all. I mean, my hands are still full, but my life is full as well. And it's great because, you know, I was introduced into calling other alcoholics, which when she reads next, I'll talk about that more. But I talk to at least 2 to 3 alcoholics a day. And it's almost, I heard a speaker here speak about this the other day, it's almost like having your own personal board. You know, you run stuff past them. And it's gotten to the point where when I tell them and I start to throw something out there, some people just say no before I even finish the sentence. They say, no, that's not a good idea, Johnny. It's pretty awesome. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Yeah, this is definitely a great description of what happens when I go out and try to get what I want. It doesn't seem to work too well. I am definitely a producer of confusion rather than harmony. When I look back at my life, everything that I tried to succeed at, I failed at. I remember coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and everything. I was a failure in every area of my life. I had failed as a wife. I had failed as a daughter. I had failed at school. I had failed at jobs. I had kind of just all gone to crap. And me going out in the world trying to do stuff, like, I remember I always wanted to graduate from college. That was my big goal. Well, that's not even a good thing. Actually, Sorry. Let me just talk about this. I like this idea of, is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this life if only he manages well? And that's kind of what I thought. I thought that if I could just find the right combination of like life circumstances, that somehow I would be okay. If I could get the degree from school, or if I could find the right job, or if I could find the right place of list to live. I mean, like, this is always a list that's going through my head. Maybe I need a different hire style or a new pair of boots, you know, whatever the fancy is at that particular moment. If I can just get it, then everything will be okay. And I spent my entire life like trying to get like this right set of circumstances. And what I can tell you is that I was never okay. Even when I got the stuff, I don't even want to tell you that this was like I tried it and it didn't work out. It was, there were times when I had absolutely everything that I could possibly want. There was a time when I had the American dream. I had the white picket fence and the two cars in the garage, you know, a little bit money to spend for the little vacations, you know, the nice husband. Like, what more could a girl want? And yet, for some odd reason, I still wasn't okay. I was a girl who was always out there searching for something, and I could never quite find it. I didn't know what it was. And in my attempts to get this stuff, absolutely, I became angry, indignant, self-pitying. I mean, I would blame everybody for everything. It was always somebody else's fault. It was the messed up government's fault. It was the messed up boys' fault. You know, it was my parents' fault. I was a latchkey kid. It was the bullies in school. You know, I had like this list of wrongs in my entire life that had been done to me. And then I did. I became angry, indignant, and self-pitying. And I didn't realize that I was self-pitying. I thought that I was depressed. But to be quite frank, in hindsight, what I realized is I was just a really, really big pouter. Like, if people didn't give me what I want, like, if I needed you to be, like, give me attention and be my friend, and like, let's all get along at work, I'm tired of all y'all's nonsense, like, I would just totally and completely pout. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. And I was always sure that other people were more to blame. Like, yeah, maybe I did do what this one little thing over here, but what you did is so much more messed up. And what's really, really horrifying is, like, those last couple of years, everything pretty much that I had judged and condemned other people for, I had become. And it was a complete mess. I got away with it for a long time, but not at the end. It was absolute confusion. As a matter of fact, there was so much of that confusion and nonsense that pretty much nobody wanted me to be a part of their life anymore. You know, like, even my own mother had been like, Ryan, you need to get out the house. I know you're going to be homeless. I'm sorry about this, but please get out, because I would just wreak havoc in your life. I would cause you a lot of fear, a lot of anger, a lot of chaos. You might be bailing me out of jail. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? I might park my car in your yard, you know, all this stuff. And that's what happens to me when I'm living in self-will. So, thank you.
Page 62. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help.
I was raised in the church. I was raised Baptist. I was raised with my grandmother. And when I say I was raised in the church, I went to school in the church. I went to church Wednesday night. Thursday night was youth group. Sunday morning, Sunday school, and then Sunday night. And it was in the home. The teachers that, in order to pay my tuition, my grandmother boarded the teachers at the house, which means I didn't get a lot of snow days. Anyway, I when I got out of college, I went to Vegas, which was running as far away from it as I possibly could. I mean, I was the proverbial sin city. And I mean, I just, alcohol was the only thing that let me feel like you guys. And let me blend in, let me feel like I have an ego and I'm self-centered and I have low self-esteem, which if you put that in a petri dish, you're going to get an alcoholic, I think, every time. But I ran wild. I mean, when I came in these rooms, I just truly didn't care about anything but myself, nothing. And I thought it was personal. I thought, I wasn't as bold, I mean, I knew for a fact I wasn't God. I didn't make the heavens, I didn't make the stars. But I thought it was personal. I thought he was out to get me. I lost my dad at an early age. I mean, I could go on just like Ryan was saying. I still whine to this day. I thought it was personal. And I thought he was out to get me. I mean, in the church, we were taught to believe that from your very first breath, you were a sinner. It has not been my experience in AA, by the way. But it's just, I thought it was personal. And I didn't want to get my head around that. I'm losing my train of thought with this. But God, with God's help, I remember when I came in the rooms, it was 8 months before I got a sponsor and I went through the steps. My MO was, I came in, I was the daily drinker. I drank every day. And when I came in the rooms, I started going, and I thought I was getting better. I started going every 30 days. Every 30 days, and then the obsession would hit, and it was a 3 or 4 day run. And then I'd come back with my tail between my legs. So finally I asked a guy to sponsor me, and 30 days goes by, and the obsession starts to hit. And I couldn't understand why. And, it was an all-day affair. I was at the house, and my ego was also so big that I remember the childhood stories of, you know, Moses having this parting seas, and I think there was one of the apostles where he actually kicked a donkey or something and turned around and talked to him, and I was like, God, you better show up for me like that. That's how I want you to show up for me. And I was running around the house just pacing, and I was so mad, and I was crying, and I was praying, and nothing was happening. And just when I was about to cave, I got a phone call. And it was from one of you guys who I'd never met. And without my knowledge of it, the guy that I asked to be my sponsor, he called him 2 days beforehand and said, hey, man, I'm feeling like talking to any newcomers. You got anybody on the hook? And I was a shaky mess, and that guy spent 2 hours on the phone with me, just talking me down. And then I got to a meeting. And I remember I got into service work at this part. It could have been anything, dirty chair picker up or whatever. I got into the group, was able to get a foundation going on. But God showed up for me that day. You can't convince me he didn't. That day was personal. I mean, and it came through you guys. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Yes, so my troubles are of my own making. And I'm an extreme example of self-riot, though I usually don't think so. Yes, I am absolutely convinced that it's everybody else. I gave you my list, my parents, the boys, all that fun stuff. And what I could never see was the way that I contributed to what was wrong in my life. Let's just say this. I remember when I first read this, I was sitting in a detox, and the sentence in the paragraph before, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of all of our troubles. I just remember reading that for the first time, and it just absolutely hit me, the way I had used and manipulated every single human being in my life. It was always about me. I would lie straight to your face, especially if it was for booze. And if it hurt you, I'm sorry. I did not see that the way that I behaved influenced what was happening in my life. Like, I would tell you that, like, I was this super great person, but you would ask me, like, generally in conversation, like, how I was doing. And I would tell you fine, and then I would go about my business because I didn't even really care about what was going on with you. And yet I would whine about, like, how I had no friends, all that kind of crazy stuff. And What I didn't understand when I read this was that I thought that I could just, like, see all this selfishness and self-centered in my life and, like, fix it myself. You know, when it talks about many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, I absolutely had moral and philosophical convictions galore. Like, I wasn't like a Christian, you know, but like I looked at the Ten Commandments and like that seemed like a pretty good thing. You know, like don't lie, don't steal, don't kill people, don't steal somebody's boyfriend, you know, like be decent to your folks, right? I had those morals. I certainly have philosophical convictions. I see them all the time on Facebook, all those memes that you guys love to post, like the super spiritual stuff. Like, I can't even think of them off the top of my head now, but they're great. You paste so many of them. I love them. I can, like, recognize the spiritual truth in them. And I think that because I have these, that I'm somehow going to be able to, like, live up to them. You know, I was not a girl who was out there thinking, wow, waking up in the morning going, wow, I really just want to be like the biggest pain in the butt today. Like, how much stuff can I absolutely ruin? You know, I was a girl who would wake up in the morning and be like, wow, let's have a great day and do good things and not drink. And try as hard as I might to, like, not be a liar, to, like, I didn't steal a lot, but I did steal a little bit. to not steal stuff. You know, all that stuff, when it came to getting what I wanted, all that stuff went out the window, you know, and it was painful to me. I felt guilty about it. I hated waking up in the morning and being confronted with those things. And if there was another person involved that knew about it, you know what I can honestly say? I'm not even sure I felt guilty. Where we really had an issue is if you knew about it. As long as I'm the only one who knows about it, it's not quite as bad. But, like, I did not want to be living that way. That was not my idea of a good time. That was not the person that I wanted to be. But with that stuff, it was just like the booze, right? Try as hard as I might, I could not make myself into a decent human being. I could not make myself less angry. I don't know about you guys, but I don't particularly enjoy being angry, you know? It's fun to, like, think about it for, you know, a little bit. But when we're going on, like, 3-4 hours, 3-4 months, a couple years being angry about the same thing, not fun for me. Like, are we over this already? I've had the same thought about 70 times. I'm kind of tired of thinking this. You know, didn't like it. I didn't want to be the scaredy cat little girl. You know, I'm a huge fear girl. I was terrified coming up here tonight. My, like, heart was pounding. Like, that's not fun for me. You know, I don't want to live like that. This does not go well. Didn't want to do that. But the problem was, is that of my own power, I could not fix that stuff. And I did lots of stuff. Like, I went back into, you know, self-will run riot mode. You know, what do I need to do to try to make this stuff better? And all of it failed. Reducing my self-centeredness, wishing and trying on my own power, absolutely did not work. Just couldn't do it. I had to have God's help. And I'm going to be real with you. That is the absolute only reason I became interested in any kind of spiritual life at all. I mean, I like the spiritual life in theory. Like, I remember back in the day, every now and again, there was this really cool movie called Stigmata. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. It's awesome. I love to watch Stigmata. It talks about really, really spiritual stuff, like lift a rock and you will find me. And it's just wonderful. And I would watch that kind of movie and I would think about spiritual stuff. And then I would go back to doing whatever I wanted. You know, that was about the extent of my interest in spiritual things, you know, something to ponder every now and again, or maybe get around to somewhere in the future. It just wasn't at the top of my interest list. I thought I would be fine on my own. I thought that if I just lived right, then things would work out. And it never did. It never did. Which is where the 12 steps came in, because I didn't know how to go about changing this stuff. I didn't know how to become this better person. I didn't know how to get God's help. There was a guy, he always puts me this way. He said, "Ryan, stop trying to fix something that you can't fix." And that made sense to me, because I had spent my entire life trying to fix that stuff. It didn't work. He said, "Work on your relationship with God and see if that stuff doesn't straighten itself out." You know, my mind always goes to, well, how the heck do you do that? You know, do I gotta like move to Africa and feed the homeless? Maybe we're gonna go like Dalai Lama and I can go to Tibet and just meditate for weeks on end and I will reach enlightenment. I don't really wanna become a nun, but you know. What do I have to do? And I was told, you know, here in Alcoholics Anonymous, we've got 12 steps. You know, why don't we do that stuff and see if those things don't straighten itself out? And that's what I always have to do. I've got to put aside all that stuff. And when I focus on my relationship with God and practicing the principles in AA and keeping the steps at the forefront of my life, all that other stuff has an odd way of working itself out, you know? I did what Johnny did, you know. Today, coming up here, I was full of fear, right? Didn't know what to do. We said a prayer beforehand. They don't know this, but I was secretly praying long before that. You know, God, remove my fear. Direct my attention to what you would have me be. And then I come up here and I start talking about Alcoholics Anonymous and focusing on telling the truth and trying to say something hopefully somewhat useful. And all of a sudden, that fear starts to dissipate. And I can put some sentences together, you know. That wasn't me that did that. My instinct is I'm going to not even come up here to be, I'm going to call out at the last second and not even show. Sorry, I'm not feeling that well, or something like that. Or maybe hide under the table. Sometimes I like to do that, you know. So I had to have God's help. Absolutely, 100%. My options are, be really, really screwed up or have God. You know, like apparently I'm one of those people that is so messed up that only God can save me. And if you're freaked out by the God stuff, I'm sorry. I would offer you another solution if I had one. But Lord knows I looked long and hard and I just couldn't find it. Thank you. Thanks.
Continuing on page 62. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arc through which we passed to freedom.
Yeah, this is the how and the why of it. I went all week. I'm at the age where technology baffles me. And Dave sent me an email and about what we were going to read tonight, and I couldn't open it up. And I said, you know, it's going to be fine. I've done the third step. I'll just pray to be honest. And I did it all week. And about 2 hours before the meeting, it hit me. SimpleActions.net. They have it all there. So I went there and I clicked just step three, and it was Jim Willis speaking, and he's one of my personal AA heroes, and he was talking, if you could define an alcoholic, it would be fear, and I understand that now. When I came in the rooms, you could not convince me I was scared. I thought I was angry. I wish angry was a strong enough word. I thought I was pissed. And how was this done to me? You know, this wasn't supposed to be my life. Something got jumbled up. You know, I used to daydream about this kind of stuff. I'm a whack job. I used to daydream that, you know, there was this hall of souls and mine got mixed up in the shuffle, and it went to the wrong body. It went to the wrong, I was supposed to be some rich actor or singer. This wasn't my life. And I didn't know how to give up control. And it was just like what Ryan said. You got to do the steps. And for me, it was explained to me, it's like a grinder. It's one of the old-fashioned grinders. You just put the problems in the top of it and grind it through the steps and see what comes out. And every time I do this, it works out for the best. But there is something about me that just doesn't trust it. It's still to this day. And I have to literally get kicked in the face before I'm willing to put it through that grinder. I wish that I could tell you that, you know, after 2 years of sobriety, that, you know, it's great. Every morning, this is what my mornings look like. I wake up and my thoughts are, he's going to do this or she's going to do this at work again. And this is going to happen. And my mom wants me to call her, but she's going to want me to come over to the house and this and this and this. And all of a sudden, it's just my head's about ready to implode until I hit my knees, until I say these simple prayers. And then I get up and I make a couple of phone calls. And then I start doing the things that I said I was going to do. And everything ends up working out okay. And, you know, and it was explained to me here recently, you know, it's okay for you to say, God, you know I'm worried about money. You know I'm worried about the girl. You know I'm worried about getting older. You know I'm worried about being stupid. You know I'm worried about how people perceive me. Can you help me stay focused on what I'm supposed to stay focused on today? And oddly enough, it works. And that's letting him be the principal. And I'm not very good at it because I struggle with it. And you would think, you know, I know I'm supposed to do it. It's just, it's that barrier that I have to walk through. And I think I'm getting better at it. It's just every once in a while, and it seems like it's just around a year mark, I start struggling with it again. Or I'm a taker. I want to start taking back just a little bit of control. And I have to always remember that he is the father and that I am the son. Thanks for letting me share.
Yeah, I feel like I just like talked about all this a whole lot. Yeah, I quit playing God because it didn't work. I feel like I beat that with a hammer. And this idea that God's going to be my director now, talked about that before. For me, that's kind of more or less figuring out like what my life is supposed to look like in like this God-centered world, and much more of a focus on spiritual principles. That's a lot easier and simpler for me. And asking for direction and guidance. And just like Johnny was saying, that was a whole lot easier when I first got sober. Like everything was fresh and new, exciting. These days it's something that I have to come back to frequently and say the prayers. Relieve me. Well, we're going to read it next. This idea of being relieved from the bondage of self and asking for God's will in my life. Those are prayers that I like to use a lot because it's really, really easy to talk about living a God-centered life or living by spiritual principles. And sometimes for me, it's really, really hard in actual practice. Like I have this horrible tendency to run late at work. A ridiculously large amount of time. The first couple of years I was work, I was probably late more often than I was not. Hate to tell you this. And what happens is, like, after, like, the fourth or fifth time, you know, like, the lie machine wants to come out, and I want to start coming out with all these, like, wonky excuses for why I'm late all the time. Especially when I start to get sat down in like the vice principal's office, or not the vice principal's, that's funny, the vice president's office, you know, I would rather lie to get out of trouble than tell the truth and face the heat. That's just, yeah, self-preservation or selfishness, you can call it whatever you want, you know, it gets a lot harder than honesty, you know. Honesty in relationships is very hard for me because sometimes I have to talk about things like feelings. I don't like feelings, right? I would rather lie to you and say that everything's fine, you know? Or, you know, making amends, trying to make things right. Once again, the same scenario at work. They called me on being late. I proceeded to throw my version of a temper tantrum and, like, pout all day. And apparently I was rude to a lot of people. It got pointed out to me. I would much rather just wake up the next day, start fresh, let's pretend that never happened. I don't want to go talk once again to the vice president of the company and be like, sorry, you were right, I should not be late, and I was a jerk. Especially don't want to do it when he then says, yeah, you were a jerk, and you also were a jerk to the president of the company. Maybe you should go talk to him too. You know, I don't want to do that stuff. I also have a tendency to hit parked cars. I've lost count of the number of parked cars that I've hit. That tends to like start to knock at your pocketbook after a while. The insurance companies don't like it. And I remember one scenario that I hit 3 parked cars in 3 days. The first two, let me go out to them, find them, tell them what have I done, exchange information. The third time it was getting a lot harder because I'm like, oh my God, they're going to call my insurance company, you know, and the instinct is there. Let me just drive away, you know. So sometimes the spiritual stuff seems easy, right? Because this is the stuff that you teach like 5-year-old children, probably even younger if you're a smart parent. You probably start when they're like 2 or 3, as soon as they can probably talk, you know, like don't lie, make things right, try to be helpful. But for me, for some odd reason, when it comes into play, not so fun. But I try to let spiritual principles guide me more than those selfish and self-centered instincts, because that's all that it is. It's me being selfish and self-centered. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, our last reading tonight is on page 63. We were now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him.
During that that year where I was beginning to drift away from AA, I went to what's the campground? I can't think of it right now. That meets every summer, Wakefield. I went to Wakefield, and there was a great speaker. His name was Mickey. Spoke. I think it was the last meeting before we left, and he said, "God will take away all your difficulties." And he paused. He's a good speaker. And I remember, yeah, go, Mickey. And then he pointed out, and it seemed like he pointed right at me. And he said, but not for your benefit. And I went from, yeah, Mickey, to screw you. And, man, it was so true. It was so, so true. And it was, I can't even talk about this without getting emotional. You know, if you do this, miraculous things happen. It's indescribable. You see somebody in a meeting, and you can see it on their face. They're you. They were you when you walked in the door, and you have the ability now to walk up to them with a smile on your face. You know, and I didn't like you guys when I came in. I mean, I had Jonas. I had yellow eyes and orange skin, and you guys were all smiling like that with your fresh skin, and I was pretty bitter about it when I first came in. But I see that guy when I come in, and I know what he's going through. And, you know, you shake his hand. You exchange phone numbers with him. And more often than not, you never hear from him again. But every once in a while, they give you a call. And nothing might have come out of it after that call. But they do. And it's so much better than any drink I've ever had. And, you know, and then somebody will come up to you after a meeting one time and say, hey, can you take me through the steps? And you do it, and you watch them blossom like a flower. You just, it's what God put me here to do. And it's all God. It's all God. I mean, I could literally sum up everything that we just talked about, and it's all God. And all that God seems to care about is how I treat his children, which is you. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Third step is awesome. I really think that the first 3 steps are not things that I can give to somebody. I know for me, what a lot of folks did is they presented me with this information. And then when I was ready, I kind of picked it up. And I love what it says in the next paragraph. We don't really read it, but it says it's very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person, but it's better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. It says you can use this third step prayer, or you can put it in your own words, voicing it without, as long as you're voicing it without reservation or something like that. And the big reason I say that is because I remember when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, there was this big thing of we read the book line by line by line, and then I took the third step prayer with my sponsor and this whole big thing. And for me, this happened for me. Just kind of all came together one night on October 23rd, 2009, the day before I got sober, all by myself sitting in the bedroom, when I decided to give this God stuff a try. And I don't even really think that I knew that I was taking the first three steps. I just found myself in this position where I didn't know what else to do. And so I did this. And I love this idea of offering myself to God. There was a time when I looked at this third step prayer as a contract. That's how it got presented to me later on, right? God, you're going to help me, and in return, I'm going to go out and help other people. And that kind of messed with my head for a while, because I thought that I was somehow earning this by what I did, right? If I'm this good person, right, and I don't lie anymore, and I'm never selfish or self-centered, if I help enough people, if I make all my amends perfect, whatever the list of me being spiritual is, right, me doing God's will is, then somehow I will be this happy person who stays sober forever, And that's the deal me and God made, right? And what I discovered is I can never keep up my side of the bargain. I haven't figured out how to be perfect yet. But B, when I encounter difficulties, I get mad at God because he's not fulfilling his end of the bargain. Look at me, I'm being so good now. But I get back to this place where I find that me living on self-will doesn't work, that I'm not indeed earning this stuff, where I can't fix this on my own. I can't even be the better person to get there. And here I am offering myself to God, for the love of God, please just help me. Do what you want with my life. What I was doing wasn't working, And this idea of relieve me of the bondage of self, always love that. I love that it says, it tickles me that it doesn't say relieve me of the bondage of drinking, right? This is all about not drinking. Why are we not going relieve me of the bondage of drinking here, If you read the big book, drinking was just a symptom. I was messed up long before I took a drink. I was, even on my periods of sobriety, I was pretty kooky. I remember being sober for a little while going, this is so much worse than I thought, The booze wasn't really the problem. The booze is what made me feel better, So what was the problem is the bondage of self. And the bondage of self for me is always that voice in my head. All those things that I want and that I need, just constantly going all the time. That's what I need relief from. I need relief from that real bad, And like Johnny said, why? So that I can get my goodies? No, so that I can better serve God, right? So that I can be an example of what God can do in a person's life, Like I said, I was a total and complete failure. I failed at everything, What I can tell you as a result of doing this stuff, not only have I stayed sober, I've kept the same job for 5 years. Complete shocker for me. I'm like a two-year girl at any endeavor. After about 2 years, I'm done. Something bad's going to happen. I'm going to mess it all up. It's time to start over. Who knows what it is? My mom used to say, Ryan, you always mess things up, but you manage to pull yourself back together again. And that sounded kind of nice, except for there was this voice in the back of my head, going, I am so tired of having to pick myself back up again, As a result of living this way and doing these things, I have not completely destroyed my life. I was on a cycle before, And so that is an example of God working in my life, because it certainly was not me that did this. And that's all I really got to say. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. All right, at this time we're going to pass the Seventh Tradition Basket. The Seventh Tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who so suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements?
My name is Evan Alcohol. This Thursday is the Elkcon Surfside in Virginia Beach. Potluck starts at 6:30. The speaker at 8, dance to follow. The speaker is Deanna R. from Fredericksburg and from Frederick, Maryland. And the DJ is Iran. So I have tickets right now. They're $15, $20 at the door. So I hope to see you all there for food, fun, and fellowship. Thank you.
Thank you. Symbol Actions is a hymn group. If you're interested in joining our home group members, will you please raise your hand? See one of us after the meeting. Newcomers, is there anyone in the first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce themselves by their first name so that we can welcome you to the meeting?
I'm
Alcoholic. Hey, welcome.
Anybody else?
I'm Brittany. I'm an alcoholic.
Brittany.
We have literature over here on the table and meeting lists. There are also some newcomer packets. Please feel free to take those. The books have a small price, and they're written on the inside of the book, and you can see me after the meeting if you're interested in a book. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, if you'll raise your hand? If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, we have Jill and Lydia that will be up here at the table after the meeting to answer any questions you may have on sponsorship. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church. All meetings are recorded and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. We'd like to, at this time, please thank our panel, Johnny and Ryan. I'll feel free to come up and thank them or speak to them after the meeting. We really appreciate y'all coming out tonight. And I have asked, do we have a volunteer, actually, to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
You guys mess up.
No, I'm still not up. Last week I texted after the meeting.
Alcoholic David. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. And after the meeting, some of us go out to dinner. Plaza del Sol, it's on Colonial and 22nd. So please come out and join us to continue the conversation on step 3, what we discussed tonight. And if y'all help me close with the Lord's Prayer.
Spread around.
Father,
our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.